nation. Recently, just moved back to Dublin, actually, after living. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
I scrambled my watch, so I don't say. I'm just publishing a book, The Last Falcon and the Small Organ, so why don't I start with that? Seems like the obvious thing to do. This is called Promise. It's the first poem in the new book. You get off the train in another nowhere town and are welcomed home. The wind leads you to a road and you start to walk. Where you came from is nowhere like this. A man is pushing a bike. He tells you the rain is on its way, but you don't see. He offers you a place to sleep. You keep going to where there are fields. Not far from a river, someone is calling out. A woman is standing in the doorway of a house. She sees through you. In her silence, there is something of a promise, something which suggests you could, if you wanted, become again the person you wish to be. You can hear the voices of children, their laughter. You can choose to walk on. You've been traveling a long time. Before you speak the first words of the day, you can rest. The world is breaking, and the morning is welling onto your lips. Speak. Say something. You can still be healed. I spent about 10 years in America, and the 1990s actually, and this poem is dated in the sense that it mentions being illegal in America. Now that's obviously, that's obviously passé, because, the modern terminology is undocumented. If I was to revise this poem in the future, it's called Wintering. That was my last year in Florida, illegal and thinking of marriage as one way to stay. Sleepless nights of argument and indecision. And to keep us going, I worked a cash job at an orchid farm. Long hours in the sun, poor in paradise, the heat on my back, drilling for a living. I worked with a Mexican, my man Victor, the orchid keeper called him. Friendly and amused at the affluent couples who came to purchase the rich, ornate dreams. We buried a dead owl together. I remember that. My body aching in the sun, floating home to arguments. What we were doing, I was told, was wintering, getting ready for the cold, its indiscretion, its disregard, nailing sheets of plastic onto a wooden frame, hammering, drilling to protect the fragile flowers and their steel interiors, their engineered hearts and worth. That is already a long time ago, its contradictions apparent, wintering in sunshine, the past still growing towards the light. I think of them now as some sort of emblem of that past, ghostly orchids, shedding their petals as we winter here ourselves, batten down the hatches and wait for whatever storm is coming, whatever calamity the cold has to offer us, in the same way the orchids do, I suppose, waiting through winter to emerge with budding, fantastical and colourful existence, to wait and remind us, be nothing less than amazed. €71 later. After living, this is a crude chronology I'm giving you, but after living in the States, I ended up in the north of Ireland for like 3 years, and I saw these beautiful works of art by Rhys Duffy, considering my work. And after she'd done them, she announced what a great idea would be to tow an iceberg to Belfast as some gesture of peace and reconciliation. Now, she hasn't achieved that feat yet, but I did appropriate the idea and the notion. I have acknowledged her as such, and this is towing an iceberg to Belfast. On the tip of her tongue, she reads, "Don't think of melting. Pools along the way, a river, think swimmers, shipbuilding. On the land finger, she's, don't say it, stop making sense, she's towing an iceberg to Belfast. By a horse and cart in wheelbarrows, a bird, a mountain of ice. Read, all poetry is performance. All poetry is language. Not the iceberg and iceberg. Blue and by dreams, with dreams, in dreams. Amen. She's towing an iceberg to Belfast. And gladly, to return, return the scene as a crime to its. She's towing an iceberg to Belfast on the back of an old marked liner, an exploded artifact of sorts from the folds. We'll all be there when she's coming round the mountain of ice, the iceberg. We'll all be there, takes time and money, poets with money, pleased to meet you. The latest craze, it's a thing to do, it's what we wanted but never knew, it's like heaven, we never thought of this before. It's real and imaginary, it's nothing like you thought it would be, it's better than sliced fucking pan or Meals on Wheels for that matter. It's not a trick, it's no one starving themselves for entertainment. They just blame you by sentence. Good night, it's gone on, let's have it now. Straight and simple. And what is the ship, what ship, ghost ship, don't say its name. Swallowed by a bottle, why not, a blue bottle, buzz. And floating the waves with a message for everyone, arrival time forever and sun. Museum of Ice have found bodies returned to their resting place. 30 years agreed. Here she comes, thank the. With the arrival of the iceberg, it is agreed all poems are to be decommissioned. At last, the city exhales an icy breath. This is called Dawn Song, and it's about a trip I took. From Prague to Budapest, where my father was living. And he just kicked me out after visiting, with the words, old fashioned man that he is. You vagabond, you. That is so ridiculous, isn't it? If people had smuggled animals onto the bus, I hadn't noticed. The fields were silver in the dawn. Churchgoers wrapped themselves in their mist, and out of the earth, the old cries came. No one noticed, heeded, or believed, nor in the road's plaintive appeal. So be it. The dead lying away, waving farewell or. Hapsworth smiles, no, not smiles. Workers stood up from the fields and watched our passing, some with envy, some with regret. The smell of schnapps was something we shared. There were no sounds but heavy sleep. Pale eyes expelled smoke. And the dawn sun startled us with its cold fire. My words had already banished me, but I hoped our bodies might meet before the scrapyard of longing closed its bloody gates. I was unsure in the new city, tripping over memory's shoelaces when the light of mid-morning warmed my feet and I danced over the river. You were surprised by my voice, calling out to you on the street, but you should not have been. That is what we have been doing for a long time, since the time we first met and before. Just completed a book of translations from the Lithuanian, a collaboration, I should emphasize. And, when I was over there last year, I met this Latvian poet. We went out, we drank far too much, we got a taxi home. The taxi man asked us if we want to go to a striptease bar.
Of course, you said no.
Of course, you did. Or my friend did anyway, and then the taxi man didn't like this, and he drew a knife on us, and it all got a bit hairy. What's that got to do with the poem?
Great.
Not entirely sure. No, I do. I remember it now. Yes, the first thing that I saw on a menu in a cafe in Vilnius was Bull's Tongue Slow Billion. And I said, well, that sounds interesting, I'll have that. Bull's Tongue Slow Billion, Gullify Onion Bullion, Slow Tongue Yum Sum, Tongue Salad Hum Ha. Curd Row Red Ho, Striptease Please No, Taxi Man Say So, No No Nightlight. Tin Bit, Wap Bit, In It, Red Ha, Well Fed, Gray Stones, No Bones. Burns homes, pig ears, who hears, hears, hears. Comrade dog, stop barking. Comrade dog, stop barking. Harking and parking, your tongue full, some onion, hungry, pumpkin, drum, cunning. Candle, spigot, Soviet, spigot, half dog, comrade, don, dog, what? Sick you, when, slum, billion, gully cat, beggar, bye, what? Human nets walk through, who, at you, why, what? Thank you, because untied is my kite. Slum, billion, fly night, farewell, outside, in mind. What mind? My mind. Billion, birch, tree, climb, unclimb, bay, tune, home now. In song, say so, where to, hear so, because. It's a nonsense poem. There is a part two. Part two is very different. And then I dreamt. No, it was a nightmare. My fingers came unstuck. I gathered their bloody stumps and announced the emergency to my wife, who shrugged and continued to cut the wig on our daughter's head. You are the only one I know who will have something to say about these matters. Write to me.
Thank you, Jordan.
So maybe just a couple more poems. To set up a colony in Roanoke, and which he did, and then when he left to go back to England with four supplies, when you return, you discover that the colony was gone, and it's not quite clear what happened. The last Falcon and Small Arms is from his, it's a quote I've taken from his report, and it refers to the Falcon as a small cannon, and the ordnance are artillery. No one was there when I returned, not a soul, though each one of the settlers' personal effects were remained, some wrapped in dust and overgrown with grass, axe, file, compass, scabbard, dice, and pike. Iron pots rusted, maps and books spoiled by rain. Words sank into the soil, never to be heard again, words like love and peace. In this moon-shaken dawn, there was no evidence of a struggle, no sign of violence. On a tree in Roman letters, C-R-O was carved, and so I ventured again toward the point of the creek, but again found no sign of the settlers, nor of the last Falcon and small ordnance I had left them with. The colony was lost. It had disappeared. The maps of the new world were to be my task, but there would linger about this place a shadow, one which no cartographer could draw, and the name Renault became a ghost of a name. What then was patent remains? The history? Was it a massacre or an assimilation of sorts? In these, my last years, I have often wondered while making maps of land for Raleigh's tenants in Connemore. I have wondered and dreamt and wondered, but nothing, no answer or salve has come to me, no visitation of grace either, whether I have prayed or not. I have lived since then a quiet life. I know my granddaughter to be the first English born to the land, a fact which should make me proud, but it does not. Instead, I'm left with a feeling not unlike guilt, albeit a guilt tinged with something like awe and regret. The feeling of being alone under the old world's white skies. And even if my memory fails me, even if the voices fade, I can still see Ingot at the bottom of the sea, and hedgerows on fire. I see too how history cannot map whatever losses the heart has held, and I hear cries for help in the forest, or rather an echo thereof. And within the undulations of this wild landscape, I hear it simply to be the wind exclaiming, or my own faltering mind telling me something it ought not to have forgotten. A clue, perhaps, to what may have happened, but the words, whatever words there were, are still too faint to make out, still too distant to hear. Yeah, I basically paraphrase the whole thing here. You know, so I read two poems about what happened. This is after a painting I saw by Henri Rousseau. It just made me think of my brother. And it's called "You Are the Boy in the Rocks." You are the boy on the rocks. You are the boy riding bareback, no saddle, no stirrup, or horse. You are the boy in the rocks, picked up by the wind and flung heavenwards. You are the boy in the rocks, tiptoeing through dreams, gypsies and tigers. You are the boy in the rocks, not happy or sad, stepping through worlds. You are the boy in the rocks, lost, longed for, without a past or future. You are the boy on the rocks. Okay, and I'll leave you with visiting hours, and thank you for your attention and your support. This is called visiting hours. Just to give you an idea, it's a relatively low clarity poem. It should take about 3 or 4 minutes to see that. I am driving northwards across the border into the south down and farther north, driving through a lean vegetation into summer, golden and sweet, allowing my mind to wander to familiar and unfamiliar places. A map lies on the passenger seat beside me. I've reached for it, but I'm distracted by the white, by the 10 white crosses on the embankment before Newry, which makes me think of you and your troubled time. How you hid beneath the bedclothes, starched bright sheet and old blue blanket, one which reminds me of our childhood. How do I know it's you? It said from under the disheveled canopy you have created. How do I know you're not just a voice in my head? I've tapped you on the back to stir you from your week-long disturbances, shifting from sleep to waking dream. You groan and move and peek out at me from under the covers. Chocolate bar wrappers and sweet packets litter at the bedside table. Bottles of water and juice sound half-finished. You sit up, finally, not with the mock machine gun you fired the first time I went to visit you. It could happen. You bellowed, dispensing several rounds of the other patients. This time your one caveat is, it's worse than one flew over the cuckoo's nest. Say it without a grin, but with the doleful look you carry on occasion, the same no doubt when you met in Spain two men from the IRA. Two men you say followed you there after 3 years surveillance to interrogate and torture you. I had just started to work on the border when you fell into your troubled state, filling out applications for peace and reconciliation. Peace money is what they called it, as if such an ambition had a price. I wondered now as I drove across borders what solicitude it would take to bring you back to who you were. Not, I imagined, a doctor who asked me if I thought what you talked about had happened, had really happened. This is your story, but I know you're not going to tell it, not again, not with the relish and obsession you did while still in it. Your time inside was frightening, but amusing too. When you were called for dinner once and I went to leave, you pointed to a bed and told me I was welcome. The next day, you recounted how the paramilitaries had administered painkillers, truth drugs you call them. You talked about how they kept you against your will, how they tried to drown you. I turn the radio on, but it serves no distraction, and so I drive on with the thought then that this is the legacy of the conflict, or one of its legacies. That after the bombings, the shootings, the warfare and ceasefires, after peace and reconciliation, what some of us are left with is a man in a hospital bed, afraid for his life. Drive on, and I do. Into unknown territory, marked with flags, unlike the mines, which is an unmarked maze, past Balmina towards Coleraine, past the bunting and the painted curbstones towards the end of another journey, the end of another reverie, and what I am left with is the same uneasy satisfaction I feel when leaving you on those old occasions after visiting hours are over. Namely, the questions: what is real, what happens, what really happens? And, dear brother, part of living, part of the struggle, our struggle, I suppose, is that no matter how much you think about it, interrogate our paths or actions, no matter how much we beseech you or each other, we'll never really know. Thank you very much.